Here we go. Here we go.
Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. We've studied hard. We've been perfect in every way, despite the immense pressure that comes with being the oldest sibling. And we hope we can come out of this with straight A's on our report card. But until then, I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I'm Harry. You can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I'm Emily. You can follow me on Instagram at Emily Sui.
Also, with us today is the once-in-a-lifetime cosmic event known as Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at StoopKidsPod. That's kids with a Z. Don't forget it! And folks, I gotta admit, this is an incredibly exciting day for the podcast. We've finally landed one of our long-awaited sort of white whale guests. The scheduling finally worked out, and he's here in the booth with us today. Please welcome to the show, super producer and super buddy, Jason Daphnis. Jason, thanks so much for hopping on the mic today.
Thank you so much for having me on, Cody. How are you all doing this evening?
That's what he sounds like. It's unbelievable. I've never heard the man's voice before.
Yeah. Needless to say, we're all elated, as you can tell. I think the only thing that can top this is Jason hearing a little bit about your history with the show. Hey, Arnold, if you wouldn't mind pulling back the curtain.
Sure. It's been really fun to hear other folks on the podcast sort of give their histories with it, but also a little bit nerve-wracking because my history doesn't go nearly as deep or nearly as wide. I watched probably just about as many reruns and contemporaneous episodes as a kid, as any kid who was just home a lot. But I consumed what you probably call about an average amount of Hey Arnold as a kid. It is still, like, for most kids my age, it's a staple of, like, that time. It's sort of the postmodern cartoon, and it is for me too. But I have nowhere near encyclopedic or even reference knowledge. It's more like the mood that permeates when I think about Hey Arnold. I think of the tone that it set and the sounds that occurred and sort of the characters that were built more than individual plot lines. So this show has been particularly beneficial for me to go back and be like, oh yeah, I remember that happening. But if you asked me what happened in that episode, I would not have remembered. So it's a good refresher. I guess that's kind of, I don't have like the fun family stories about, you know, watching the show together or having like, you know, deep, meaningful connections over it. But I did enjoy it as a kid and I'm really enjoying going back to it now as an adult.
Well, that is great to hear. And it's nice to get that other kind of, you know, that demographic covered. You know, I feel like a lot of people speculating that a lot of people coming into this are established fans of the show. Just if you're listening, we've got something for the other folks out there who might be dipping their toes into the water for the first time. So that's, yeah, super cool, super awesome to have you represented and representative in that way. I should stop talking and get into the episode. We have a few succulent episodes on our hands today, if I do say so myself. Yeah, that is an SAT word. And we'll start off talking about episode 15A, which is, of course, called Olga Comes Home. Original air date for the episode, November 25th, 1996. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Jealous about her smart, talented, popular, older sister Olga returning home from college, Helga fiendishly changes one of her grades from an A to a B+, which sends Olga into a deep depression. Very well characterized. Shouting out, as always, the folks who made this episode possible. In addition to having Jamie Mitchell supervise the direction, we've got Stark Howell and Larry Leaklighter serving as co-directors for the episode. The lone writing credit today goes to Steve Vixton. So shout outs all around. I'll throw it over to you first, Harry. Tell us about some of your thoughts coming away from Olga Comes Home.
Yeah, thanks, Cody. It's funny, we talked in this in our group chat before this episode about how almost intimidatingly rich this episode is. And that's definitely how I feel about it. I mean, I think I've said before that I think Helge is the stealth main character of the show, right? And this is one of the most important early characterizing episodes for her, especially coming off of the cusp of Spelling Bee. We learn a ton about her and about her interpersonal relationships and dynamics in this episode. And it's really like a keystone episode to understanding who she is for the rest of the show, and especially who she is relative to Arnold, and maybe even why she feels the way about him that she does, as we get into later in episodes like Helga on the Couch. This is an episode, like a lot of Hey Arnold episodes, that does what Hey Arnold does so well, in that, you know, you hear the plot description, and that does get you a really long way toward understanding what this episode is going to be about. But I would argue that until you see the episode, you miss out on a lot of nuance, because I think there are a lot of little touches to the interpersonal dynamics between not just Olga and Helga, but Helga and her dad, Big Bob, Helga and her mom, Miriam, and Olga and both of her parents, that make this a lot more nuanced and even a lot more tragic than it might have been otherwise, in some really fascinating ways that'll be really fun to dig into. So it's like, this is an episode that sort of ostensibly sets out to explain Helga, right? And it does so very successfully, but in the process, it like communicates a lot about familial dynamics and what it means to be different people to the people you care about, in a way that like really makes this something that's fascinating to dig into, in my opinion. So I'm super excited to hear everyone's opinions on it. Especially Jason, as not only a brother, but also a twin brother, which has got to be very interesting to bring to this episode.
Oh yeah, that's oof. I am salivating at the thought. But first I will now kick it over to Emily. Emily, what did you think about Olga coming home today?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking, Cody. I think this is a very serious episode for Hey Arnold, more so than other ones we've seen. Like, there's less throwaway jokes and just, like, not all that lighthearted. It is pretty serious and sad in its tone throughout. And yeah, it really a bummer to see Helga's family dynamic and the fact that she's really the scapegoat of the family and Olga is this perfect golden child. But yeah, I don't know. It's really interesting just to see that sibling dynamic and seeing how her parents treat the two of them. I think it makes sense, like, why Helga acts in the way she does, to get revenge instead of continuing to suffer in her sister's footsteps. But, yeah, this frames their relationship, in a very clear way, I think.
Yeah, you were very right about that. All right, Jason, half of a twin pairing, it's been built up. Give us a look inside your brain. What'd you think of this episode?
Well, I really like how we've characterized it as sort of a serious and more downbeat, maybe more maudlin episode, in the way that there are a whole lot of maudlin Hey Arnold episodes. It sort of colors the whole show to me. Again, like that bloom that exists around the show for me from childhood really comes through in this episode, though you might not like really see it until the very end. I'm really excited to talk about how this episode ends, but I think it's serious. I think it's like stealth serious almost, because there are like a few really comedic moments. There's Helga getting all of the gifts that Olga was going to get, but she's too depressed to accept them. So she's choking on chocolates and wearing dresses that don't fit her and going to, you know, third row center seats of a Broadway production that she doesn't really care about that much. But it like sort of, I love where it ends up with Olga and Helga's relationship. Over the course of the show, we've gotten a whole lot of Helga soliloquizing about Arnold, but not doing a whole lot of self-reflection. And this episode is about that explicitly. Like, there are a couple of times, actually the last time I can remember is probably Spelling Bee, where she's given a moment of self-reflection about what she wants and what's good for her and like what, how she moves through life, who she is. And that also was an episode that featured like a foreshadowing of Olga, almost as like, it almost gave this episode before watching it sort of a, like an urban legend episode feeling, where it's like, oh, the mythical Olga is finally coming into the picture as a full character. Obviously, like, again, with the contrast of those, of these two characters, of these two sisters, neither of them moves too much from their established identities, you know, as the overachiever and the sort of cantankerous rebellion or rebel, but Helga moving exactly 0% from who we think she is and who she's been established as, over the course of the show, I think is a really interesting choice. And again, one that only comes in right at the end. So I don't know where is a great place to start. But suffice to say, I really liked this episode and it defied my expectations, even though I remembered little bits and pieces of it as we were going.
For sure. I guess really quickly, and then I'll throw the mic over to you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead, Cody.
No, for sure. I did want to point out, you know, the three of you did kind of land on, the similar sort of, vibe of, you know, this episode is clearly different from, I guess, like the sort of median type of energy you would get from a Hey Arnold episode. Less lighthearted, I think is something Emily appropriately characterized. This episode reminds me of the sort of like fight or flight response that gets triggered in me whenever I step foot into the Pataki household. The way that, like, especially Olga's bedroom is shot, with that song playing on the boombox, even once it like gets turned off, you know, is a nice sort of like comeback joke. Like the damage was done, at least for me as a kid. That is a very frightening environment to be in. And one, you know, not like, or rather very dissimilar from the one that I was used to. You know, I'm the older sibling. It's me and my brother and like I lived with my parents and like, I don't know, I just didn't see any of my household in that or vice versa. So that was like such a weird episode to come back to after so much time and like feel that sort of lurch in my soul, as I revisited this. The one thing that, I guess I thought about this time, and I know we've talked about it in other episodes, this sort of nod at like cosmic influence. And I don't think this episode really leans on it, and it's like very, very minuscule detail. But when Olga's report card kind of floats back down to the floor, there's that sort of like it's chimes playing, this sort of like, you know, twinkling, like foreboding noise.
It's like a painful moment. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Helga like side eyes it. And it's this weird sort of like, you know, the gods, are out to, you know, make Helga learn a lesson or to feel sad or whatever. And I don't know. Again, probably just in that moment, I don't think that's like a necessarily a grand takeaway from this episode, but like, it's maybe important to characterize this, to me anyway, is not even remotely close to the most grim Olga Helga episode. Much darker times to come, I think.
Which is directly prefigured by the ending, which is maybe what we'll talk about, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, here, I'll kick it to you, Harry, in whatever ways maybe you want to expound upon that or something else that maybe came up in our intros.
Yeah, I just, Jason, you asked, and you brought up a lot of good stuff I also want to get into, Cody, but Jason, you brought up that you didn't know quite where to start, and I would really love to back into this, right? So both of us had a really strong reaction to the ending, and I'm really interested in hearing your thoughts on what that was. So can you explain it a little bit and then tell me what you thought of it?
Sure. Let's set it up. So it ends with Helga and Olga having a light confrontation. Helga has sort of realized the error of her ways in as much as she can, and she's admitted to Olga that she changed her grades and that, you know, you can tell her parents and they can get mad at me and they can idolize you like they've done for years. And then Olga says, "No, I'm not going to do that. I have all these expectations of our parents built up on me. I kind of get sick of it sometimes. They don't need to know." And there's like a hint for just a moment that they're going to, that they've got, you know, a somewhat healthy relationship. They're sort of like meeting in the middle in ways. And then just before Helga leaves the room, like Olga says, "What else are sisters for, if not, you know, keeping each other's secrets and being advocates for one another to their parents?" And Helga says, "I don't know," and starts to walk outside the door. Olga says, "How about we go get mocha lattes?" Helga turns around. They both have this weird blue moment where they're both looking at each other, but with like slightly suspicious eyes, just still frames, just shot, reverse shot. And then she says, "Sure, whatever." And the episode ends, you know, like it's just this really weird moment that to me was like, they have actually made no concessions. maybe it's like a more dark or maudlin ending maybe it's not as dark or maudlin an ending as I'm painting it out to be, but that like they're realizing in that moment that these gestures, these performances they're making toward having like a healthy relationship with one another and a healthy relationship with themselves are in fact some form of like self-delusion, that they're not their actual intentions. That's sort of what I read from that moment. I don't know if that is what the rest of the group got.
Yeah, I want to hear what everybody thought, but just to real quick, I agree with you, and it is like startling, right? Like, I don't think we've ever seen animation like that on Hey Arnold, right? Where they're both literally cast in blue, and it comes out of nowhere. Like, the first time I watched it, I literally thought that it might have been like a mistake or something on the episode, but it's not. It's clearly intentional, and it is like
it's barely a beat, you know? It's not like they focus on it and there's a musical sting for, you know, seconds and seconds. It just like happens. Episode ends. It's bizarre.
Right. It's like a deconstructive property that they entered into this episode, and it's really a keystone to me about not only what this episode is doing, but also like Hey Arnold in general. It's like really brave to do this, because this was and is an episode that is very unsparing in its depiction of a very dysfunctional family, and I really love the fact that they nod to that at the end of this episode, and they say like, hey, like, there are moments of grace in dysfunctional families, but this is not solved, right? Like Helga and Olga have not reconciled. And like I had talked about how that the reconciliation that Helga and Olga had, it felt sort of false even before this moment, right? Because mm-hmm. Olga folds like very quickly. She says like, oh, like I know you were jealous, and like my parents have this expectations of me. She even says the line to Helga that like, you're lucky that they don't even notice you, which like, especially if you understand Helga and how deeply she's internalized her inferiority complex.
That's such a barb, yeah.
It's a terrible thing to say to another person, especially Helga after we've seen and sympathized with her. And like, you understand, or at least I understood by the end of this episode, that this is not actually an equitable relationship. Like, mm-hmm, these are two mm-hmm. people who have deep-seated problems with themselves and each other, and that is not going to end just because of this moment that they've had together. And I think that like, given everything that Hey Arnold is about, which is so much a show about how not only can you still have the things that you think about yourself and you can still be the kid, but the other side of that is also that like disillusionment never goes away, right? And I think that Hey Arnold is a show that continually sort of points to that like, listen, like, as you get older, like the world is going to keep disappointing you. And like how you respond to disappointment is so much about what it is to be a person. I think that like that leaving that space, that sort of deconstructive moment where it's like Helga and Olga are not actually like, this reconciliation is a moment. It's not a sea change, is like a really important point to make. And I think it's a very subversive, surprising point, especially for a kid show, right?
Definitely. And like, again, I like how Olga was sort of foreshadowed in Spelling Bee as like, as that perfect character, as whatever, but like in another role that Helga consciously defined by misspelling qualm at the end of the episode.
Right.
Like she's been contrasted against Olga as a character for a couple of episodes now, and both times have found just like unremittingly, unmovingly Helga. It's just such a really, I think, powerful statement on her self-identification, especially in the face of like those closest to her, like you were saying.
Those are all great points, because I feel like the moment at the very end with the blue stills is kind of hinting at like, even though Olga and Helga recognize that like it would be healthier for them to be confiding in each other and keeping, you know, having more trust between the two of them and keeping things from their parents when it makes sense for them to, like for that a healthier sibling relationship, like they still aren't ultimately going to change, and
right,
and not even that, but like the ways that other people treat them are just not ultimately going to change. Like we see even the teacher at the beginning favorites Olga, who has been out of the school for what, like decade or something, like
right, yeah.
And she's,
that's a really good point,
the teacher's favorite even. So it's like, oh, we recognize that this is the way it should be, and Olga even says like, yeah, I should tell the parents that you did this bad thing, but I'm not going to. So I feel like it's kind of hinting at just that they know they should, but it's just nothing will actually change between them.
Yeah, and Cody, sorry, before we pivot, there's one more thing, because that's such a great point, Emily, that like the reason why it's not going to change is because of external factors, right? Like you had said, like the reason why Helga feels guilty in the first place is not necessarily just because of what she sees is happening to Olga. It's because it's also affecting her other family members and affecting her ability to get what she wants, right? Like her dad becomes depressed, her mom becomes even more depressed, and she knows that like she can't be Olga, which is ultimately what she had spent the episode kind of trying to do, is replace Olga, right? Like she puts on Olga's dress, she goes to the show with her dad, she eats Olga's chocolates, she has the fantasy of herself dating the guy that Olga's dating. She knows she can't get there, and so like there is that reconciliation, but it's begrudging, right? Because it's like ultimately these people, they don't just want to treat each other differently, right? Or they want to be different to other people other than just each other. And so even if they can successfully like reconcile this relationship, they can't reconcile the factors that brought about this relationship in the first place, which is why the relationship is going to default back to what it was, right? Like, unfortunately, and I think that the show does a really great and terrible job of demonstrating this, and terrible as in it is terrible, Big Bob and Miriam are never going to care about Helga the way they care about Olga. They're just not going to. I don't think that the show even holds that out as a possibility, right? Even though it plays with that later, with those characters' arcs. And that's ultimately why these characters can't get along. And like that is even more tragic and more true to family life, right? That like sometimes like people who should be able to be friends aren't going to be able to do that just because of the way that other people treat them. And there's just nothing you can do about that. And that's okay, right? It's still okay for Helga to be who she is. And even in a sense for Olga to be who she is in the face of that.
Right. I feel like that they point at that with Helga's moments of like taking on Olga's personality and like right. The dress and all that. Like she, you can tell there's this distance between it where she's like, it's very performative and she's like, you know, do I even want this? You can kind of tell it's not, you know, it's not coming from an authentic place. And yeah, great point.
Yes. Yeah, I guess echoing sort of what everybody else has brought forth up to now. Right. To me, like that, you know, casting these characters in blue and it felt like the show kind of stutter stepping us and be like, hey, look closer just for, you know, even a half a second here. And
it's brutal.
You know, you'll see the double speak that's going on. And we're right. Somebody mentioned that it's something very or something that the show brought to us that's very unlike anything they've done up to now. And I felt a lot of that this episode. The sort of Dutch angle close up we get on Helga when she's cackling at the table is like a very she's not painted as a nice person, a quote unquote nice person. She's obviously a very complicated person. She's, I mean, the ostensible protagonist of this show. But just like seeing her shown in that way was like also jarring in a weird way. Seeing Arnold in, I mean, this might be the first time we really have seen him kind of in the way that we would maybe see Helga in any other kind of episode where Arnold's at the forefront, having him come in, speak truth in real life and in a fantasy, and then just kind of fly away. That was, you know, interesting to say the least. And also, I don't know, I guess I think somebody used a transatlantic accent on a different episode, but Olga coming in with that weird... a half transatlantic, half like Scottish. I've never
like
been able
Valley
to really
girl a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like an amalgam of, yeah,
it's
just like
perfect,
non-vocal.
Right?
Right. Exactly.
Because it's clearly an affectation of a college girl who wants to be sophisticated.
Yeah. Very layered. Makes you think. Go ahead, Ari.
Yeah, no, you just brought up so many good things. I can't believe we haven't talked about that dream sequence, right? Like, we learned so much about who Arnold is to Helga in this episode, because Arnold is like Helga's redeeming consciousness, right?
Exactly.
That she has arbitrated off onto another person. And like the real tragedy behind that, and we'll get to this, right, when we get to Helga on the couch, which is like the big Helga episode, is that like it's because Helga doesn't see herself as redemptive in any sense, right? She has to love Arnold and she has to like arbitrate her love onto Arnold in order to feel like there's anything about her that's worth preserving. And the reason she feels that that way is because of what her family did to her, which is horrible, right? And so it's so important to see Arnold in this context this way, because he is like mythical in this episode. He's like the voice of goodness that redeems Helga. And it's really, really interesting and surprisingly subversive in my mind, the way that this episode treats Helga, because they simultaneously make her sympathetic in the sense that she is the POV character and we understand why she's doing what she's doing. And she's the villain, right? Like, unambiguously, the thing that she's doing is bad. Like, that's a bad thing to do. Mm-hmm. But we also understand it. And the stuff we get at the end is like, it's maybe okay that Helga reacted that way, or it's justified almost, right? And like, that is also a subversive thing to say, especially to kids, and especially as like an anti-shame episode, which is a really powerful thing, right? To like combat shame in kids. It's like, it's just really operating on a really high and really sad level.
For sure. I wanted to point out the painting that is being referenced in this dream sequence. So it's a Salvador Dali famous surrealist painting, yes, called The Persistence of Memory. In Spanish, that's La Persistencia de la Memoria.
And Spanish?
what can't you do?
Oh my goodness. But yeah, he made it in 1931. And I want to make a note of it because, well, most people call it like melting clocks or melting watches or soft watches. This Wikipedia summary and description analysis of the painting says that the painting epitomizes Dali's theory of softness and hardness, which was central to his thinking at the time. So I think it's a very apt choice for the creators to bring Helga in, especially considering, yeah, she's taking on this fantasy idea of like, okay, maybe I will listen to the angel of reason, Arnold.
Yeah.
Tone down the hardness, the bully side of me, and actually do the right thing here, as the angel suggests so lovingly.
Yeah, and a fantasy space where she is allowed to be soft. Like, think about that, huh? And like the fact that Arnold is there. Jesus.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
It's so sad. Oh my god.
I'd like to think of this as a fantasy space where we can all be soft. I guess I will use that to open it up to anybody else who might have, I guess, final thoughts, shout outs, or anything else from Olga Comes Home.
Shout out to the concept of going out for mocha lattes. It's not really a date thing. And you realize, like, in childhood, that must sound like the most adult sophisticated thing in the world, but really you're going down to the Caribou Coffee and meeting a friend and sitting down in uncomfortable wooden chairs. So I love that as like the let's go on a date thing with two boys in college and reality. Just, I guess, with 2020 hindsight, it's like, who would I go out with for mocha lattes in specific? Not many people.
Yeah, it's such like a teenage fantasy thing.
I really love it.
It's faux sophistication, right? It's so perfect for Olga.
And it's playing really well at that.
I wanted to shout out Arnold's floating hat, his little cap, in the dream sequence. Yeah. That's a nice touch by the animators. And also just wanted to shout out when Helga and Arnold are in the line for the cafeteria line to eat, there's a sign behind them that says picture day is coming, and then it says free cones. So that's fun. It's a nice little moment that in an episode that doesn't really make me laugh out loud at all. I like seeing the little graphic touches behind them.
Yeah, I wanted to shout out one last sort of like artistic reference. I don't have as astute an analysis as Emily did for The Persistence of Memory, but when Helga's in her room trying to debate what she's going to do about Olga and whether or not she's going to change the grade on the report card, she adapts Hamlet's to be or not to be speech like very directly. She says like, what is it like to let the better angels of my reason win out or take sweet black revenge or something like that? And it's just wild to me that like, again, like we talk too much about how this show is like really like stealth sophisticated super good. But like, this is a 15-minute episode about a dysfunctional family that references Hamlet and Salvador Dali. Right? Like textually, it's wild to me that's something that they chose to do.
Indubitably. yeah, I don't, I hope it's not too bold to say, I think this episode's report card is one that we can hang proudly on the fridge so that everyone in our families can admire it. But yeah, no, with that, I think that about does it. Jason, thank you so much again for coming out of the shadows to be here with us on the microphone today.
Thank you for calling me out.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for this episode. Thanks for being there as well for every other ding dong episode we make. Tell me, where can people find you online and or in the real world? And or do you have anything miscellaneous you would like to plug?
You can find me crouching and skittering behind a microphone most weekday evenings.
That's right.
You can find me on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can listen to Crossfade, a podcast on the Midmax Network, which I produce and create with Matt Helgeson, former Game Informer editor and former member of the Minneapolis music scene. And Try Love is a podcast that I make with my good friends and co-hosts, Harry and Cody, about movies that play at the Trilon Cinema here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. A lot of local good podcasting stuff going on, but just follow me on Twitter for some of that sweet, sweet engagement action.
Yeah. Yeah. Lights, camera, engagement for sure.
Yeah. Right.
Is that the first time we've promoted Trilove on this podcast?
It probably
and
is.
And the last, assuredly. We're going to sidestep our own self-promotion. But yes, for the rest of you out there who might be listening, thank you as always for tuning in. Do not touch that dial because we'll be right back with our discussion on the second half of episode 15 of Hey Arnold. So don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. As they say, all great guests come in pairs, and in this case, we're extremely fortunate to have with us a friend who is also, in some cases, a roommate, and who is also, in some other cases, a noted previous guest on other local tangential topic podcasts. Hope that intro was good, Seth. Welcome to Stoop Kids, Seth Zarati. Seth, thanks so much for being here today.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me. Really excited to talk about Hey Arnold with you guys.
We're very excited to have you. And I guess the same special question for you. What has been your relationship with Hey Arnold over the years?
I think just in general, somewhere between a casual and strong fan. Growing up, I was very much a Cartoon Network kid, but I definitely did watch Nickelodeon cartoons. And I do think Hey Arnold was part of like the after school block that was, you know, like Hey Arnold, Angry Beavers, some other stuff. But I definitely do remember watching the show, enjoying the show. It wasn't any, you know, ritual or anything like that, but I do know, you know, like my parents know about Hey Arnold. My dad still makes like jokes about loving somebody like Helga loves Football Head and stuff like that. So it's you know, it's in a not a cherished place in my, you know, in my childhood, but it definitely holds a spot.
Well, that's good to hear. And also, thank you for planting the idea that Helga Loves Football Head is kind of the Joni Loves Chachi of our generation. I'm going to hold on to that forever. But I guess before we do that, let us first maybe pay tribute to episode 15B of Hey Arnold, which of course is called Sally's Comet. The original air date for this episode was November 25th, 1996. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Arnold and Gerald mail in cereal box tops in order to receive a telescope so they can see the well-known interstellar event known as Sally's Comet. The problem is that it is too bright for them to see the stars, so they try to convince everybody in the city, rather, to turn off their lights. Once again, shouting out the fine folks who helped make this episode possible. Jamie Mitchell supervising the direction. We've got Dan Povenmire serving as co-director. And also, welcome to the co-director's chair, Howie Parkins. This is Howie's first director credit. So, hey, that's awesome. We'll throw a party for you whenever the pandemic ends. Maybe. Don't hold us to that. Please don't. And the writing credit for this episode, the sole writing credit, the man of the hour, Joseph Purdy. So shout outs
oh, wow.
to the Purd. Yeah, shout outs to the Purd Man. Emily, I'll go to you first. What do you think of Sally's comment?
Yeah, this is a super fun episode, in my opinion. I think it they pack a lot in to it as well. So they just cover a ton of ground while also having a pretty fun time throughout the entire 11 minutes. And yeah, it's like cool to see kids mailing in box tops from cereal just to get a telescope, and grandpa reminiscing on his time seeing this Sally's Comet 70 years earlier, and like getting that black and white flashback from him, and the different style of animation they switch up to be all black and white and grainy is really cool. But yeah, Gerald, I feel, is the real star, the standout here, of the episode. And I love just seeing how like the kids go to such great lengths to be able to see this once in a lifetime comet. And it's just a blast to watch, I think.
A blast from the sky, indeed. Harry, what'd you think of this fine comet?
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense that this is a Purdy joint, so to speak, right? Because it's really meticulously beautifully paced. And honestly, it kind of sneaks up on you, right? Like I think that this is like very much a B episode compared to Olga Comes Home, because Olga Comes Home is so dense. But this episode ended up making me almost as emotional by the end, because I really appreciate the theme here that they end up getting to, which is such a natural continuation of the sort of thesis about parenthood and mentorship that Hey Arnold weaves throughout the narrative, right? Where like, grandpa had this experience when he was a child, and like, despite how things have changed, despite how technology has changed and how the city has changed and how being a kid in the city has changed, the fundamental things still apply as time goes by, so to speak, right? And grandpa feels this need to facilitate this experience that he had for Arnold and Gerald. And then he gets to like benefit from the fact that Arnold and Gerald clearly were as moved by it in spite of the changes as he was when he was a child. And like, there's something just like very beautiful about that. And it makes this episode like really fun and like really heartwarming to watch, especially because like Emily said, up until that point, it's just a fun, great adventure episode, right? Where like, there's a lot happening, and like, they go to the Eagle's Peak, and then they go to the radio station, and like, there's so much happening, and then it all wraps up in this really like beautiful way, I think. And so it's just a really good episode.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. Seth, do you agree with that? And if so, and or if not, why?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with it. I think it's interesting that you brought up the grandpa Phil's role in this, just because I think, as I'll say, like, I know I expressed interest about talking about this episode because this was an episode that really stood out to me as a kid, that I remember watching. And I think as a kid, and even as an adult when I rewatched it, one of the things that sort of stood out to me was just, it reminds me of, you know, best-selling YA novels, or this focus on these kids, being able to, achieve like something great. You know, they're able to, in a, you know, B episode, 15 minutes or less, you know, set up these grand stakes of getting the whole city to turn its lights off, and then they're able to do it. And it just filled me with like a sense of wonder when I was a kid, like, wow, like they can do that. Yeah. I can do that, you know? What Harry brought up about, the grandfather and like legacy, that was something I didn't really consider until watching it this time around, where like it sort of made me wise now that I'm older, like sort of seeing the DNA, the sort of ritual passing of these, traditions, like through generations. And you get to see it, from multiple perspectives. Like you get to see, Arnold and Gerald trying to see Sally's Comet. You get to hear, Phil's recollection of it, and you get to see them experience that moment together. And it was like way more poignant than I remembered it being. And I guess like now that I'm not a child, I was able to appreciate that more.
Man, that is so well characterized, Seth, and all of you. The fact that, I mean, the more I think about it, like if Olga comes home is the shot, Sally's Comet is the chaser, right? Like it's that much more of a relief that we come out of a comparatively difficult watch. Like Olga comes home, and we're treated to this very, you know, it's not a like an urban legend type of episode. It's not anything other than this direct, like very straightforward kind of quest like movie. It's very like insular, or you know, very intimate. It's just, you know, the couple of, you know, the main characters. We see everybody at the beginning, which was sort of a nice touch of everybody else eating the cereal. We get more of the one-off jokes that were kind of missing from episode A. And, you know, at the end of the day, the sort of consumerism that destroyed this wondrous event is used to our advantage as we tell everybody over the radio waves to turn out the lights. So that was, a nice little flourish. On the note of Grandpa Phil, just because I know it came up a bunch, I kind of an unrelated thing, but the flashback sequence, I thought that was going to sit differently with me because I was watching it and we see the comet in the sky. And in the moment I didn't remember this episode super well. I remembered bits and pieces as we were watching, but I didn't remember us seeing the comet in the sky during the flashback. And I was kind of like, oh no, you should save that for the end when it'll be like a big spectacle. But by the time we got to the end and it was clear that they were kind of like mirroring that sequence, like beat by beat, you know, line of dialogue, exactly between the two and like the same shot of the comet in the sky. That really like brought a nice swell, to that, latter, you know, to episode 15B of Hey Arnold. And I too kind of, you know, felt myself getting, like emotional in the sense of like, man, it's a relief to be feeling, this good. So yeah, I don't know. Sally's Comet is a darn good one, I think.
Yeah. And like what both of you brought up, that sort of through line of technology and modernism to this experience that is so fundamental, right? Is that like it parallels this sort of existential tension that weighs over this episode, which is like, is it possible in this urban environment, in this world where everything is consumerized and everything is commodified, is it still possible to have the sort of coming of age, tentpole, memorable experiences in the same way that Phil did, right? Where in the flashback, turning out the lights is as easy as dumping a bucket of water over the side of the building, right? And that's all his dad had to do so that he could see the stars. Here, they had to get the entire city to turn off the lights, right? And so, like, there's this sense in which it's like, it's getting harder to construct the sort of childhood that he feels that Arnold and Gerald are heir to, or maybe even if they want, right? Like there's some sense in which that is just fading from memory. And this ultimately becomes an episode about how it's still possible, right? Like it might mean something, or it might take more doing to establish, but if you can get there, if you can make it happen, it's something that is still, you can still appreciate in the same way, and it's still possible to reconstruct what it means to have a really magical childhood, like Seth said. And I think that like that bears out the magic of the finale here so well, and it's so earned, right? And it feels so good to see that.
Yeah, one moment that I was remembering, I will obviously keep this rated G, but there's a moment where they realize that it's too light in the city to see the comet. And Gerald, his first attempt to get the city to turn off the lights is him just yelling from the rooftops, like, hey, like, you know, turn the lights off. We're trying to see the comet. And he's met with, you know, neighbors just kind of like, nah, you know, buzz off, kid, kind of thing. One throws a tomato and you hear like the glass crash and the cat screech. It reminded me a lot of the moment from Coming to America where Eddie Murphy's character says, hello, my neighbors, and is greeted with obscenities. But, you know, him being naive and good-natured just responds in kind. But I like what Harry said about, I talked about this sense of wonder and like this adventure that Cody brought up, but I also think like it was like a very sweet reminder, or like a, hey, this is still a thing that's important, like a sense of community and wonder.
Yes, kind of thing. Yeah, very good. Right. Yeah, for sure.
Because I feel like, you know, I don't have the life experience to even make this observation, so I'm completely shooting from the hip here. But it feels like a general sort of point of discourse has been, you know, as we've become more globalized, as we've become more consumerist, more, you know, quote unquote, distracted by technology, some of the human capital that we share has sort of been lost, and this sense of community. And I mean, I think even as a kid in the mid 90s, whenever I watched this, like part of that was there, you know, like I was around when the internet exploded. I was around, as, you know, video games became big, and I didn't play outside as much as generations before me. But there was still this moment where like a community came together to make that earnest moment that you're talking about possible. And I think somehow that even through all that, like that base human experience resonated with me even as a kid. Cause I didn't have the words to put to it then, but like, hearing you talk about it, that's definitely something that stands out to me.
Wow, I'm so glad you characterized it that way. And even without, I haven't seen Coming to America, but I know enough about what you mean, and for that, you know, about that scene in particular. But the like thinking about this episode as like a fish out of water type of situation, but it's not Arnold and Gerald coming to like, you know, coming face to face with this community for the first time. It almost lands like a, you know, the subway episode, when it is that's like a mixture of like childlike wonder and awe, and like maybe seeing things that are familiar or seeing things in their community that, like they once knew, kind of like a Lockjaw scenario, but that like gets into urban legend territory. There's a whole Venn diagram for this stuff that's in my brain that I will never be able to like effectively communicate, but the idea of this episode's journey being like recontextualizing and finding not necessarily like a middle ground, but like, you know, a fertile space in which, you know, these generations of kids and adults, and these like ambitions, these ambitions that like tie us all between generations, can exist, can coexist peacefully, and, you know, look up at the stars together. That's, man, I don't know, like it hits hard, and it hits hard at the end of the episode when, you know, they're standing there on the rooftop saying, what do you think we'll be doing in 70 years? That is, man, that, it really, man, I'm a big ol' softy, maybe, but also maybe not.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, that line you just brought up, Cody, is so important. And also, Seth, what you characterized so well, there's almost an addition to that, right? Which is that like this episode maybe is making the assertion that like as these moments of community, of true community and a true coming together in commonality become more difficult, or more rare, there's a commensurate greater like hunger for them, right? Because like it's so important that in the end the whole community had to come together to make this happen, right? Like Arnold and Gerald were the focal point because they went on the radio and they were the person who put the message out, but in the end everyone had to turn out their lights together, which means that like the way that the Sally's Comet is framed is as something that everyone decided to enjoy together, which is suggesting that in this sort of like, you know, scare quotes era of greater technology and greater disconnection, there is actually not only still the will and the hunger for community, but in fact, like it's still there, and it's more powerful than ever for how rarely we get to experience it, right? And there's something like very redeeming about that, and very heartening.
Yeah, and the fact that the kids have to go to such extremes just to like get past the commercialization of it all, like I think that says a lot too throughout the whole episode. Like this event is a once in a lifetime chance for, like you're saying, like the community to experience this amazing phenomenon together, but like they can't even get over to whatever park it is to see it in better lighting because of like all of, I don't know, like everyone decided to go at the same time. Everyone's stuck on the highway,
right?
And there's just ads and like people selling comic glasses or merch or whatever on the side of the road. Like, so it's like they have to put in so much more of an effort and like be really determined, like Gerald is throughout the whole episode, just to see it through.
Yeah, it's wild, right? It almost becomes an episode about what it is to create good community, right? Because it's like the reason why it's hard for them to get to the mountain is because everybody's trying to get there, but nobody decided like, hey, what if we just turn off the lights together, right? There's very much like there's a great metaphor there about like what it takes to create something worthwhile versus trying to go out and get it, right? Like there's a selfishness that's distinctly commercial about leaving for the mountain, right? Because everybody's trying to get there so they can have this experience for themselves. And then at the end of the episode says, well, but if you decide to have this experience together, if everyone can have this experience, then you can all have this experience, right? So it's like in addition to everything else it's doing, it's a really good sort of assault on the idea of sort of selfish consumerism and how that actually like it ruins the experience for everyone, including yourself, if you're not willing to share it, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense too with what like the kids are on the soapbox just trying to convince everyone in the beginning to turn off the lights and watch the comet, and each adult or kid or whatever who's passing them by just has a different excuse for what they want to do, you know, as an individual that night instead. Like they couldn't be bothered. Yeah, good point, Harry, as always.
Yeah, because it's like it's not an individual responsibility, right? That's a really good point. Yeah.
What is an individual responsibility is what I'm about to ask of y'all. It's come up. This is more of a kind of leans into the like the conventions we enjoy, or you know, more. I'm characterizing this all wrong, but with this being the sort of chaser to Olga Comes Home's shot in this metaphor, there being more one-off jokes, I'm curious to know what stuck with y'all. I know seeing the marquee for Sally's Omelets in that sort of like merchandising, that like strip of comet-related shops kind of tickled me in a good way. There's a lot of good bits from the DJ, who, you know, we could maybe speak to specifically a little bit if somebody wanted to. But you know, the mysterious hours known as we is a right gem. What did everybody think?
Yeah. You just mentioned the DJ, so I have to bring him up now.
Please.
I do not like that character at all. And I'm wondering now, as we're getting into this discussion, it's kind of rolling around in my head, does he kind of stand in as a metaphor as well? Like he's this clearly like phony try hard. He's trying so hard to be cool. He's trying to like emulate jazz musicians, which is already a mess because he's a white guy with a jazz show. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like does he maybe kind of standing in for this like weird commercialization of the event? That's kind of what I'm wondering if what y'all think about that. I don't know.
Yeah. I can't really speak to the commercialization, because I do think Harry, I mean, it was on the cusp of me ready to, you know, say comet watchers of, you know, working comet watchers of the world unite.
That's right.
under, you know, Marxist discourse here. But, I do definitely think that it's important, like through that lens, right? If Nocturnal Ned is the phony, right? The whole way that, Arnold and Gerald are able to get what they want are like by completely usurping his sort of position, right? Like they wait until he drops his donut and pretend like, oh, this is what I would say if I was on the air. And then they like trick him, who, if we want to say he is the stand-in for or another face of this sort of modern commercialized individualist society that's very self-serving, the two protagonists of this quest get what they want by completely undermining him. So I think, you know, as far as that reading goes, I definitely think that that's a strong way of looking at it.
Yeah. And like he even says that his hands are tied by the system, right? So like if he is a stand-in, he's a patsy. And I think that he is like the light that that Phil's father douses, right? Like so less like a personification of individualism and evil itself, so much as just like a tool that can be repurposed, right? And like the show says that dousing that light so that they could see the comet was a good idea. It was also a good idea to just take over the radio station for a second, because it's like, that's your radio station, right? It's like, this is something that's supposed to communicate to you. And so like, you can do that, right? It's a great message to seize the means of broadcasting.
Yeah, for sure. And then, like, I just feel like Grandma's advice to Arnold is kind of shining through them in that moment when they take over on air. Grandma and Grandpa's, you know, ways of living really inspiring the two kids there to do what's right, even though that's not technically, you know, following the guy from the system's rules.
Yeah, it's anti-authoritarian again, right? And that's totally what Grandma's all about.
Absolutely.
Wow, we were kind of lacking Grandma in the physical sense in these episodes, weren't we? Not so much in, you know, in the symbolic sense. She, you know, she lives in all of us. She, you know, anti-authoritarian podcast, etc.
She's a star in their sky, if you will.
Hey, hey.
In my sky, for sure.
More like Pookie's comet.
No. Ooh. Any other shout-outs? Shout-out to Pookie, first of all. But any other lingering thoughts or shout-outs y'all want to put forth?
I did unfortunately really like Nocturnal Ned. I think he's a very funny character, Cody. Like you had said, I think he's like hilariously over the top in the sense that like my dude is eating donuts in the room and like has a totally different voice when he's on air and is so phony, and like I found it very funny, but as Emily noted, he is also very skeevy, which is great.
Yeah, he for sure is. My shout-outs go to Arnold and Gerald's Star and Planet costumes, which we don't see them make. So that was reminding me of, what's the name of the episode where they're dancing with sixth grade girls? We don't see them practicing their dance moves, but then we just know that it happens. I feel like that that's written in here with, they must have worked hard on these Star and Planet outfits that you love to see them then wearing out on the streets. And I also wanted to shout out Gerald's line when him and Arnold at the very beginning are talking over the sugar chunk cereal bowls. And Gerald's like, wait, the comets happens once every 70 years? Where is it the rest of the time? And that's just a really cute nod to, I don't know, the mystery of space.
The mystery of space.
Yeah, I was just going to shout out Sugar Chunks as a cereal, just in general, as a kid and as an adult, the idea of just making a cereal that is as straightforward about what it is as Sugar Chunks just really tickles me.
It sort of looks like Reese's Puffs to me. But yeah, definitely shout out Sugar Chunks. Would be delicious, I'm sure.
I think
Go ahead, Cody. Oh, I was going to say, and shout outs to Arnold's very stereotypical, but like fundamentally sort of like spirit in the right place, but wrong headed statement that Helga says, hey, why don't we just throw the cereal out in the garbage so we can get the box tops? And Arnold goes, we can't do that. There are people starving all over the world. And it's like, all right, Arnold.
Look, he's trying his best.
It's great. Arnold's the best.
Yeah. I mean, also, we're all just trying our best here. And, you know, not to be too candid, but I think our discussion that we just had was out of this world. But Seth, thanks so much again for being here today. Where again can people find you online, and or do you have anything you would like to plug to the universe?
Sure. Yeah. You guys can find me online at SN Zarati, basically on every platform. I was somehow able to secure that handle like everywhere.
King.
Yeah. As far as plugs, just other local podcasts, maybe like Try Love, a movie podcast. I know the guys there. They're a pretty good squad. You should check them out.
Yeah, they're okay. We'll leave it at that. Man, so much self-promotion. I'm getting very mushy.
I'm a guest. This doesn't count as self-promotion.
Yeah, you're right. You live with the producer of the show. in any case, I'd like to again say thank you so much, as always, for listening to Stoop Kids. We're a Hey Arnold podcast, and you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. By the way, that's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer and super guest Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
23 Skidoo. I've been Harry, and you can find me at Shiitake Harry.
And I'm Emily. You can follow me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
And as we always... Oh, I just swallowed a prize. We'll be right back.